Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. And with us today, we have Pam Barnhill. Pam, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let me give you a little history just on my small podcast here. I am a mom kind of later in life and, you know, had kids a little bit later, worked for the government for the last 15 years. And, you know, when COVID hit and I kind of saw things differently and said, maybe homeschooling is something I should be doing. And I kind of thought it was crazy. I come from, you know, a city in upstate New York, didn't know anybody ever that homeschooled, and kind of started dabbling into going into the play groups. And I'm surprised with how many people I found that homeschool. It's like everybody's hiding under, you know, a rock of, you know, all these people. Once I discovered them all, I'm actually pretty floored with how many we have just in our area. But I started the podcast while still on maternity leave. And now I think I have to leave government work. I don't think I can go back because I just see things so differently. But a common theme in my podcast interviews has been Pam Barnhill and your morning basket. So,
oh, fun.
I said, I have to talk to Pam. I hope I can get her on the podcast because people just love what you have to say and your products and just the way that you do things. And how did you get into this?
So how did I get into homeschooling or how did I get into running a business?
Yes. How did you get into homeschooling first? Okay. Because I'm sure that was step one. And then how did it become your morning basket?
So I was a public school teacher. I taught public school for 7 years. I taught in inner city middle schools and high schools in the Tampa, Florida area. And the refrain that was constantly repeated, I was in the English department, though I did the yearbook. And so that was pretty much my full-time job, actually more than a full-time job. And as I was sitting in the teacher's lounge, we had overcrowded schools, so you never had your own classroom. And I would sit in the teacher's lounge with these teachers who had been teaching for 30 years. It was a constant lament of, all we ever do is teach to the test. All we ever do is teach to the test. So this was during the era of No Child Left Behind in the late 1990s. Early 2000s, and it was just a constant, we no longer get to give these kids what we think they need, we no longer get to read literature with these kids that we want to read, we just have to do what is on the structure of the test. And as I sat there and listened to that, I thought, you know, really, I don't want to have to teach to a test. You know, I want them to have a bigger, richer, more varied education than that. And, you know, schools were cutting arts and music and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I want my kids to have more. And my husband agreed. And so when I was also a late in life mom, I had my daughter when I was 34. She's my oldest. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we said, we're just going to homeschool. We're going to do it. And so that was, we knew from the start that that was something that we were going to do. I wasn't going to go back to work. I knew that after about 6 months, and then we were going to homeschool the kids. And so that's how we got started homeschooling. And I did a lot of research, and I was just a student of homeschooling for a while. It was something I threw myself into, and I really enjoyed researching and enjoyed doing. And then I started writing about it when we started homeschooling. I started writing about it on the blog. That was back in the days where blogs were kind of a real thing. And and it just kind of blossomed from there. So as I wrote about it more and more and people came to me with questions, what I discovered was I kind of had this ability to break down these big tasks for people into smaller, more manageable steps and explain to people concepts. You always would have people hear about something like a morning basket and they would really want to do it, but they just lack the confidence to put it together for themselves. And so I I find myself a confidence giver. Like, I show you how to do it. And so we do that with homeschool planning. We do that with the morning basket stuff. We just try to help to empower homeschoolers to do this for themselves.
And homeschooling wasn't as big back in the 90s and 2000s as it is today. I mean, it just seems to be a growing thing. And I don't know if that's social media maybe making it more apparent that people are doing this and it's doable, or if it's just the government has gotten more into the test taking, and parents are just getting fed up. Do you have opinions on that?
Well, I do think homeschooling, I do think it's grown within the past few years. I think COVID was an eye-opening realization for a lot of parents when they started seeing what was going on in the classrooms, and they started seeing what the classroom management was like, and just the very impracticalness of sending home this huge packet of work for kindergartners to do each day. And they just started seeing that this is bad enough that we might want to do something different, you know? So that really did cause an explosion in homeschooling. But I won't say that there were hardly any homeschoolers and then it exploded. It has been gradually growing through the years. And I have never lacked for a community of homeschoolers, either locally or online. I've always found it a very large, robust, vibrant communities. You may not know anybody in your life personally who homeschools, but that's because you haven't sought them out. Once you start to seek them out, it's kind of like when you're pregnant. You know, you see, like, every woman you see is pregnant, you know? And it's just because you notice it more. Or when you get a new car, and then you see everybody else is driving that car. And it's because you notice it more when you're doing it yourself.
Well, that's so true, because a year ago we were getting ice cream, and there was a family at the table next to us that had five boys, all under the age of like 10. And I looked, I got talking to them about something, and then I said, "Do you guys homeschool?" They're like, "Do we just have that look about us?" And I'm like, "Well, yes, actually you do. But now that is, you know, something I would ask somebody, where before I never would have thought to even ask them." So we've been friends for the last year, for over a year now. And so you're right about that. You start seeing like the red car, you see a red car everywhere.
Yeah.
So tell us about your morning basket. What is it? Like, I'm just getting into the homeschool realm. And actually, part of the premise of my podcast is, should I homeschool my kids? So now that we're, you know, well into the podcast, I have decided to homeschool my son for his kindergarten year. And my daughter's only one, so she's just kind of observing. But how would I incorporate your morning basket, and what would it provide us?
So the concept of a morning basket long predates me, and it's been around in homeschool circles for over 30 years now. And what's so interesting is when I start describing a morning basket, there are people who say, "Oh, we've been doing that for years. We just didn't call it that, or we didn't know it had a name." But basically, the premise or the idea is that your entire family comes together and everyone learns together. So now you have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and that 1-year-old is just going to kind of be along for the ride. But as that 1-year-old turns 2 or turns 3 or turns 4, and you have a 4-year-old and like, do the math, 8-year-old, then you're going to be in a situation where we can be learning a lot of things together. And especially as your younger child gets older. And so the idea is there's an efficiency here from teaching multiple kids at one time. And there are certain subjects that lend themselves very well to doing this. And one of the things I really encourage people who are new to homeschooling is to stop thinking about public school. Stop thinking about what even a classroom education, public, private, whatever, stop thinking about what that looks like, because there are very efficient models and structures that serve a purpose in a public school, but they are not the only way to educate. They're simply the models and structures that serve the public school, that serve 30 kids in a classroom, all of the same age. There are other models and structures, if you take the time to learn them, that far better serve and meet the needs of homeschoolers. And a morning basket is one of those. You can combine your kids to learn some subjects together, these content area subjects, things like science and history, literature, and all manner of the arts, if you would like to include those in your school day, and I really encourage you to do that. So all of those things are these content area subjects. They're not skill subjects. Skill subjects are math, learning to read, learning to spell, learning to write. Those kinds of things you kind of enter into at the beginning, and you follow this prescribed path where you have to learn one skill before you can move on to the next. And each child needs to move at their own pace, and an older child is going to far outpace a younger child. Those are your skill-based subjects. But for all of these other subjects, you can really enter into those wherever you want. Nothing says that a kindergartner has to learn about community heroes or that you have to start first grade with ancient history. A lot of homeschool curriculums do that, where they start first grade with ancient history. Or that in fourth grade, you have to learn state history. You can learn all of this stuff at any time, and all of your children can learn it together. So it's a very efficient use of your time. It's also a wonderful time to build those family connections, because if everybody in your family is going off and doing their own history workbook at, you know, at their desk or at the table or something like that, and you're not really having great discussions or great conversations or learning about some things together, then you're missing out on one of the most wonderful benefits of homeschooling.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, and just thinking about myself in a public school with 30 kids, and you know, we didn't even have classroom helpers. It was just one teacher. If you had a thought in your mind about the history lesson or a question, I mean, you don't generally raise your hand to ask that little tidbit or to say, hey, does this relate to that? And a lot of the history that we do learn in school, it's just dates and names. You're not learning the actual, this is why this war was started. This is why they threw the tea into the water. Yeah. This is, you know, it's just, this is the date it happened. This is the name of the people that did it. You don't even know the outcome. I don't know the outcome of what happened. I don't know. Did they stop taxing it? I don't know.
There was a war. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. So it was before the Revolutionary War that happened?
Yes.
So, and you know what? Do you want to know what's sad? My knowledge of that is from the musical Hamilton. It's not from public school. But, you know, those are the types of conversations I'm so excited to have with my kids. And I tell my son that now. I'm like, I am so excited to learn this stuff with you. I didn't learn it in school. And it's, you know, you feel bad saying that because the teachers try all they can. But like you said at the beginning of this, they're teaching to a test. And if on a test, they know that the dates and the names are what's going to be offered, they don't have the luxury of really delving into activities and discussion about why. And when you have 30 kids, I mean, I'm only 5 weeks into our kindergarten curriculum, and it is very hard to keep the attention of a five-year-old. So when you have 30 kids, it's near impossible to keep their attention. And I know there's different ways of doing so in different activities, but like I say to my son, because he really relates to like vehicles, I'm like, listen, do we like giving oil changes to cars? No, but you have to do that if you want the car to run efficiently and if you want to drive it or with your four-wheeler. So therefore, we have to learn the letters and the sounds. And yes, there's fun ways to do it, but also we just kind of sometimes have to get down there and learn it. You know, when you have the one-year-old that's trying to get your attention too. So that's what I'm working on right now, is trying to make the standard stuff fun, but also incorporate what you're talking about, these discussions that we can start early on. And I think some people think, well, maybe I'll wait till the baby's a little older for it to be more beneficial. But you would say no, right? Just start right now at 5 years old and 1 year old, right?
Well, yes and no. So actually, homeschooling is optional in our house until the child is six. So all of my children, well, no, I take that back. My oldest, I started preschool when she was four. And then my other kids kind of came along and did the stuff with us, you know, just to their ability, and had fun with us. And I have all these fabulous preschool pictures of my oldest two together, especially. My youngest didn't get preschool because, like, by that time I was homeschooling two older kids and I just didn't have time for that. So he enjoyed what he could enjoy from the older two and actually read faster than the other two and turned out just fine. So
yeah,
at our house, it became the thing where it was really optional for you to do school before 6 years old. It was an invitation.
We just got done reading The Tuttle Twins and The Fate of the Future, book number 9 in the Tuttle Twins series for ages 5 through 11. What I love about these books is how it relates back to real life every time. The Fate of the Future has a fun story centered around the book The Anatomy of the State by Murray Rothbard. And even though it's a kid's book, I'm learning right along with my kids. The story in Fate of the Future centers around the importance of competition among businesses and how detrimental monopolies can be. We even related it back to our recent vacation to Maine and how we went out for ice cream to 3 different places. And because we had options, the ice cream parlors had to compete for our business by either lowering their prices or increasing their quality. Every time I read a Tuttle Twins book to my kids, it sparks the best conversations, and I always end up feeling like, wow, I didn't realize my son could actually grasp concepts like that. If you didn't catch my interview with Tuttle Twins author Connor Boyack in episode 24, you definitely want to go back and check that out. And if you'd like to get the Tuttle Twins books for yourself or someone else, please go to my link so they know I sent you, thehomeschoolhowto.com/Tuttle, and use code Cheryl40 to get 40% off ages 5 through 11 series plus more. You can use the link and code in my show's description.
Because what I have found is that a lot of times with younger kids, the interest and the attention span is not there. And so you end up butting heads so much trying to get them to do what you want. And that's where you spend the bulk of your time, when it's easier to just wait until they're ready. And then you're able to, do things so much quicker and easier, and it all comes very naturally. So that was really more how we did it. And I am a big proponent of, like, you know, do things because you need to do them, do things because they have to be done, kind of like you said with the car and the oil change. But another thing that I would really encourage moms of young kids to do is keep the lessons super short. We think about, you know, kids going to kindergarten all day and the, you know, they're there for 5 or 6 hours and, oh my goodness, how are we going to do that at home? And that goes back to this idea of there are structures for school and there are structures for home. And one of the surefire ways to build a habit of attention in children is by starting the lesson off super short and always leaving them wanting more. And so when I did start school with that 6-year-old, and sometimes when they were 5, they would say, yes, I want to do this, and we would do it. It was hit or miss. But when I did start school with that 6-year-old, we were talking 10 minutes of math, 10 minutes of reading practice. So if all I was doing was working with that 6-year-old for the day, the school would take well under 30 minutes, and then we would enjoy our morning basket together, which at those ages is a lot of movement and music and nursery rhymes and fun poems like Ooey Gooey Was a Worm and some messy art projects and a lot of playing with blocks while I'm reading picture books or playing with Legos while I'm reading to them and things like that. So it didn't seem very much like school. Actually, when my oldest was 5, we had when my youngest was 5, we took off school for the summer. And I was laying in bed with him one night trying to get him to go to sleep while it was still light outside. And he said to me, he says, Mom, why don't we do morning time anymore? I said, well, Thomas, it's summertime. We don't do school in the summer. And he says, Mom, morning time's not school. So for him, that kind of learning that we were doing had nothing to do with school. Now, as an almost 14-year-old, it's a totally different situation. But when he was 5, that's the way he saw it.
And okay, so I totally agree with you on starting them when they're ready. I think for myself and a lot of other parents out there, it's not about the kid. It's about the persona that other people have and the pressure they put on us. That if my son's cousins are in school and they know how to read by a certain age or spend a certain amount of time learning a day, and my son is not, then it looks like I'm failing as a parent, even though I know I'm not. But it's that pressure on us to be like, okay, well, we have to do something. And then also when, you know, we have transition to, like, if there is downtime, you know, I'll say to him, okay, why don't you listen to an audiobook? You know, and he's found The Boxcar Children. I grew up reading those. So he listens to them on audiobook and he loves it. But there are other times where he's watching TV and I feel guilty where at least I know if, okay, well, we did the math and, you know, stuff today, even though he's only five, we did it. So I feel a little bit accomplished. But how do you tell the and I think that it'll be better with my daughter. And if I, you know, had more kids, you ease up as you start to see your oldest grow and you're like, they're turning out okay. But it's so fearful to kind of just like let go and not do the, this is our curriculum. This is 5 years old. This is, you know, what you would be doing if you were in public school. And I understand that we have to break it, but how mentally do we do that as parents?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, three different things that you could do. The first one would be to really sit down and articulate your why for homeschooling. So why are you homeschooling? Why is this important to you? Why is this something you want to do? And not only write this down, but also be able to articulate it succinctly to anyone who asks. And so that way you always feel like you're armed with an answer. Now, you're going to do that. The other thing you're going to do is you're going to do some research. So do some research into, if you are fearful, if you are worried, do some research into some methods of education and some other thing that are out there that have far predated the idea of public school. Do some research into Charlotte Mason and classical education. Doesn't mean you have to follow that, but it does start to show you that there have been methods of education that have been around far longer than the progressive public school movement that our public schools follow, that were created by Dewey and Horace Mann and some of the others in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So there are methods that far predate that. So educate yourself about that. And then the third thing would be to start creating your own vision of education. What is important to us in education? What are the things that we are choosing to do in our homeschool, even if they have nothing to do with what's being done in public school? And then what are the things that we are refusing to do in our homeschool? You know, one of our statements in our homeschool vision is, I refuse to be dictated by man-made guidelines. I'm going to allow my children to develop at their pace and to work to mastery before we move on to the next thing. I had a kid who ended up being dyslexic. We were still learning to read at age 12. Now he reads beautifully. He's in high school. He does a wonderful job. But if I did not have the confidence of my vision and the fact that I was not going to be rushed by those man-made guidelines, I would have been in a constant state of worry, as opposed to just an occasional state of worry, you know, when he was growing up. So having that vision, being able to articulate it to someone else, having the knowledge of all of these other methods of schooling. So then it's not just, oh, we're not doing what the public school's doing. Then it becomes, we're doing this and this is why.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Can you walk me through a little bit of your day? You still have kids that you're homeschooling now, right? You said, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do.
What does it, and I, that was a big question for me before I delved in. It was, you know, of course there's this curriculum, that curriculum. But just, it was scary to think even, what does this day look like? And I think until you dive in it and make it what you want, you wouldn't know. But can you tell us a little bit about what your day actually looks like? Especially because you work too.
Yeah. So my day with an 11th grader and an 8th grader is very different than what my day looked like when I had two preschoolers, or, you know, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. But right now, what my day looks like is I get up very early, usually because the dogs get me up. Nobody else is up before I am. Actually, they are just now starting to get up, and it's 9:25 at my house. So they're just now starting to get up. So I get up in the morning. I have a little bit of quiet time. I do my morning routine with, like, you know, making the bed and all of that stuff and getting dressed. And then I usually have a little bit of time to work before my school day starts. they have started being really good this year, knock wood, and hopefully this continues, at getting up sometime between 9 and 10 o'clock and getting a couple of their subjects kind of done before I even wake up or before I'm even ready to start school. I come out at 10, and that's when we start our morning time. So our morning time lasts usually about 45 minutes long. This is one of our shorter morning times we've ever had. And we are doing, in morning time, we do current events. We watch the world from A to Z with Carla Zeus. And then sometimes we go off on a rabbit trail and really spend a long time discussing those current events. We do some family prayer and religious reading. And then I am reading literature to them this year. So I choose a book and I read that aloud to them. So that's our morning time. And then after that, they move into their independent subjects. So we've had a lot of discussion over the summer, like what they want their weekly schedule to look like, what they want their workload to be each day, and different things like that. And then based on those discussions I've made with them, both boys have asked me to make them a list of things to do each week. And so my youngest child homeschools Tuesday through Friday, and we do morning time Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And my oldest child homeschools Monday through Thursday. So there are 2 days a week that I'm only working with one child at a time.
Okay.
And then they move into their independent work. And, you know, they both have 3 hours a week with the math tutor. My younger son has an hour a week with the Japanese tutor. And then they work on their science, their history, and their grammar largely independently. My older son does his writing independently. And then I usually sit at elbow with my younger son to work with him on his writing, because that's a subject that he is just not inclined to do independently. While this is going on, I am in the room. So between the hours of 10 to about 1, I am there and available to them. Sometimes their work goes outside of those hours, but those are the hours that I'm there and I'm available, and homeschooling is my number one priority. Now, I have the luxury, because my kids are older, I can go change a load of laundry or fix us some lunch or, you know, unload the dishwasher or something like that. But I try not to be on any kind of screens or anything. I try not to answer the phone. To take messages. I really try to stay right there and be focused on them. I don't go start a project like cleaning out the closet or anything, even though my kids are in high school. Mm-hmm. And then once that time period is over, they're kind of finishing up the rest of the day by themselves. And then I come back in here typically around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I can start working again and work until my husband gets home about 4:30.
And you have a child that has graduated?
I do. I do have a child that has graduated.
Congratulations. Yes. And so what are they doing right now? Did they take the college path?
So Olivia is working at the moment. She is working part-time for a local uniform shop. And in January, she will be starting the cosmetology program at our local community college. So she's decided to do cosmetology.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I think that's also a question. And when I talked with Connor Boyack, the author of The Tuttle Twins, you know, we had a discussion about how homeschool parents are worried that their kids won't get into college. Well, what if they don't have these prerequisites? Or what if they didn't take these exams? And, you know, I'm in New York, we have Regents exams, you know, and you're supposed to want a Regents diploma. And that's all we know because it's here. But I believe that's just a New York thing. So obviously other kids are getting in without these test scores and course, you know, courses under their belt. But also what I talked with Connor about was that, is the goal college? You know, right. Why is that our goal? And kind of like you said before, write down your whys. And that's a really good thing to do for even the college, because why do we want them to go to college? Is it just to get the degree, or are they doing something that they need a college education to do in the real world? You know, and he has written another book, which I will check out as my kids get older, about, you know, is there really a need for college? My husband is in the trades, and it's much cheaper to go to school for 2 years. The trades weren't really pushed when I was in school. You know, yeah. I don't even know what all the trades are, let alone all the jobs in the world, to know if I need a college degree for them or not. But how do you approach that with your kids? Because they are getting older. Do you do the college push, or do you really look to see where their interests are and what sort of jobs they could do and if they need the college degree?
The second one. I mean, we totally leave it up to the kids. And so my philosophy is don't close any doors. So as we're doing their high school course of study, as we're doing the program, then I am constantly talking to them about, you know, what kinds of things would you like to study? We, like this summer with this, with my son, we pulled open the 3 diploma options that are available. We homeschool with a cover school in Alabama, and that cover school gets to determine how a diploma is awarded. And there are actually 3 different options. And so I pulled that open and I looked at it with my son, and you have, you know, here you have the honors diploma, you have the academic diploma, and you have the standard diploma. Which diploma would you like to work towards? Which one would you like to work on? And we talked about this idea of not closing any doors. So he is thinking at this point that he is probably either going to go to trade school. There are some electronics and avionics programs. We're very close to a military base that has a lot of people who work on helicopters and things like that, where you can make a very good living. That's something that interests him. That may be the route he takes. But we don't want to close that door if he decides, you know, a year from now to do something differently and go to college. And so I think it's a conversation with your teenager. You know, my daughter had, she had the academic diploma. She is able to go, you know, into the cosmetology program because she wants to, but she could just as equally as well go into the regular community college route. And my husband and I are big fans of the community college route. We both went through community college before we went to a state school. It's not stopped either one of us from doing what we wanted to do in life. And we are strongly in favor of ending college debt-free. Whatever you decide to do. The goal is, if you're going to college, to get out of college debt-free.
Okay, have you checked out episode 21 with Lindsay, creator of Treehouse Schoolhouse? I asked Lindsay on the show because I fell in love with her Instagram page. She is like the homeschool family I strive to be. Lindsay was homeschooling even before she had kids, homeschooling as a nanny right out of college. Over the years, she has developed super creative ways to help kids learn that can be fun for the whole family. From products like her morning time and daily rhythm and her nature studies to alphabet cards, her Rooted Family Bible curriculum, which is coming out soon, and a Connected Christmas, which is right around the corner, hint, hint. And what is a Connected Christmas, you ask? Well, it's an invitation to gather your family and celebrate beauty and delight through festive carols, stories, poetry, art, baking, and handcrafts. It's about family, and it's about connecting hearts to the heart of Christmas. From preschool to middle school, there are variations and activities for all ages to celebrate together. Let them know I sent you by using the link treehouseschoolhouse.com/thehomeschoolhowtopodcast, and you can get 10% off all products. You can use the link and code in my show's description.
So what I would really encourage parents to do is, as they're working with their children and the children are deciding, where do I want to go in life? Do I want to go to a 2-year school? Do I want to go to a 4-year school? Do I want to go on the trades? Do I want to do something that requires this degree? Those kinds of things. If you know you're going the college route, then approach that college either just by going to their website and looking at their admissions page, or calling an admissions officer and finding out what are the requirements for this college. Now, if your first choice college is kind of hard to get into, I would go ahead and get myself a couple of backup colleges as well and look at their requirements. And then you create a high school program that's based around those requirements. And so your child is working towards a goal from the very beginning. I know I want to go to this school. Here are the requirements. And so it becomes way more meaningful for them to do that work. And they kind of lean into the meaning once they get 10th, end of 10th grade, beginning of 11th grade, they start like, okay, this is my goal. I'm going to start working towards it.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think I can see homeschooling kids, I don't know if there's been any studies, but probably end up in jobs that they're a lot more fulfilled by doing later in life. Because, you know, maybe you have, you know, if you have the opportunity to really find what intrigues you, You know, mm-hmm. I never knew, you know, what I wanted to do. And my mother always just push, get the degree and go to college and then get into government work because then you'll get a pension. And, right. you know, now that I'm, you know, 39 years old and have two kids and I'm like, I've been working for 15 years for this pension. And now I'm going to say, isn't really that important to me. Or, you know, maybe I can go back later on. But really deviating from the standard way to go, it's hard. And it's hard to go for myself, let alone push this on our kids of you're not going to go into, you know, the public school system. We're going to do it a different way. I give homeschooling parents a lot of credit because it is hard to deviate from the norm. But I think once you're in it and you realize how fulfilling it is and how much you're actually giving your kids, it's so you never question it. Like, have you ever had a moment that you questioned your decision to homeschool?
All the time. I think you'd be crazy not to. Yes. And sometimes the bus goes by and I'm like, you see that bus? I'm going to put you on it tomorrow. But yeah, all the time. And there are doubts all the time. And there have been times where I've been, oh, am I doing the right thing? And, yeah. you know, even with a kid who's graduated, who is about to, you know, for it wasn't until this summer that she made that decision finally. For the longest time, she was like, I'm not sure what I want to do. And you talk about kind of doing the norm, but let's think about this really, because I was telling Olivia this summer, as early this summer, as we were talking about what she wanted to do with her life. I'm like, look, Olivia, when I graduated from high school, my job, what I do for a living, did not even exist. Right. No one knew what the internet was. Well, there were a few people who knew what the internet was back then, but sure. not very many. It was not a public thing for sure. No one knew what the internet was. No one had ever heard of online courses or online memberships. And no one had even ever heard of a podcast. Those right. things were simply not done. Self-publishing was not done. My job did not exist when I graduated from high school. And so this idea that, you know, we're going to go into this one thing for the rest of our life. That was our parents' idea. That was your mom's idea, right? Mm-hmm. And so she pushed you into that. And so this idea that we're going to go into one thing for the rest of our lives, I think that's last generation's idea. I think now our kids yeah. are graduating and what they end up doing when they're 45 or 50 is maybe hasn't even been invented yet. And so, you know, we just want them to be able to learn and to be flexible and to be excited by the world around them and encouraged to go out and find out new things. And so we give them the skills to do that, the skills to be good citizens and to be members of society and things. And then from there, they'll pick up and learn what they need to pick up and learn.
And that's so true. And I think of myself, like I always wanted to learn. I just, the way that it was presented in the public school system just didn't work for me. So I kind of think of it now as like, I'm a lifelong learner despite being in the public school. Like, I'm learning way more now, and even just simple things like about nature outside. You know, my aunt was in town with us last weekend from Wisconsin, and my grandmother, her mother, was from Poland. So she has all these just wonderful tricks that she knows that they never got passed down to me because my grandmother passed when I was only 8. But, you know, she's helping me with my garden and she's saying, you know, you have a butterfly garden over there. And I'm thinking, I have a butterfly garden? I didn't know that was a thing. She's like, oh, yep, you have, what did she call it? The Joe Pye weed. And she's showing me and lo and behold, there was a butterfly over there. I mean, I didn't even know that this was in my backyard. And just little things like when you hear the I live in the country now, you know, you hear the coyotes and deer. I had a podcast episode where I talked about how we saw a coyote in a parking lot. And then a little bit further, I saw a deer hiding. And my husband was talking about how the coyotes were probably surrounding it. And I'm I didn't even know that that was a thing that happened literally outside our windows. I just didn't grow up with that knowledge. My mother didn't have that knowledge. She obviously didn't pay attention if her mother was trying to teach it to her. But my mother was also the generation that of the growing up in the 60s. She was a teenager in the 60s. So she went into the workforce. And then we went into daycare. And that was kind of the first wave of that. So it's really interesting to me when you start looking at the history of education and the history of, you know, women getting into the workforce and how in so little time things just went really kind of a crazy way, you know, just an unnatural way even. And we are so worried about curriculum, but outside our own window, there's just a world of things to discover. And I don't know how I would discover some of it without the internet. So I guess I am happy for a little bit of that. But I guess you'd get books. You'd get nature books, right?
You like, do, yeah.
Rachel Carson. And I didn't even grow up going to libraries. So this is all a new experience for me, too. Yeah. Like doing the read aloud revival books. Because where do I even start, right? Well, that's been a big help. And going to the library and just knowing that there's an app, you can request a book, whatever books you want, and they send them right to your library. I mean, it couldn't get easier. I guess they could drop it off at my front door, but I'm not going to complain. It's just so different to how I grew up. And I really just encourage parents, like, there are hard times, sure, but there's so much out there that makes it so fulfilling. And, you know, even when people say to me, like, still, you would leave government work, I'm kind of like, I couldn't imagine sitting in a cubicle for another 15 years. Thank God this happened to me. Like, and I could discover this way of learning. And you know, I hope that my son also has the energy and the love for it like I am now.
Well, and you have so much to learn. I mean, that's just the wonderful thing, is you have so much to learn. And you have the thing that homeschoolers need to succeed, which is a mother who is willing, or a father who is willing to do this with their child, but then also this spark, this interest in learning all of the things that you never learned before. I mean, so much about being a homeschooling parent is kind of redeeming your own education and learning all of the things that you never learned. You mentioned the Boston Tea Party earlier. A year and a half ago, we had a speaker come into our Your Morning Basket membership to talk about tea. And one of the things that she touched on was the Boston Tea Party. I had no idea. There were actually like 11 to 13 different tea parties all up and down the coast. That there were multiple tea parties, not just the Boston Tea Party. That's really the only one that gets talked about. But in so many of the different colonies, there was a coordinated effort for colonists to go out and dump tea into the different harbors. And so we're just constantly learning all the time. And, you know, if you approach it with that kind of enthusiasm, that's going to take you through some of the hard times. I tell people I love homeschooling in the macro sense. There's so much wonderful things I love about homeschooling. I would never stop. It's something I enjoy doing. Sometimes in the micro sense, it's a little bit aggravating. So when that boy starts to turn into a surly 9-year-old or 11-year-old or 13-year-old, and he's not always enthusiastic about what you're learning, you stay enthusiastic because he's just got hormones. It'll all be okay in the end.
Well, and thank you. And I appreciate you saying that too, because I do try to be like very real with everyone. It isn't always going to be this one. You will butt heads, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not making it as fun as it can, or, you know, that it is the real, but anything worth doing is hard, you know, and anything rewarding is hard sometimes. So, that's the truth of it. Can you tell us just a little bit more about the different things that you offer through the Morning Basket? I know that you talked about the podcast, so go ahead and promote your stuff, because I think it really is a beautiful program and such beautiful things that you have to offer.
Well, thank you. We do have the Your Morning Basket podcast, which is absolutely free. We've got over 140 different episodes all about morning baskets in your homeschool. And morning baskets do not have to be done in the morning. If you're not a morning person and you're like, oh, I can't even, you could do it at different times a day. We also have Your Morning Basket Plus, which is where we call it the easy button, where we provide the plans for you. So if you're like, oh, this sounds great, but where am I going to find the best books to read and the right poetry and the pictures, and I just don't even know where to start? we help you get started with the membership. And also, we have individual morning time plans if you want to just dip your feet in and see what it's like before you join a membership. You can come and buy an individual set of plans on the website. And then we have so many other resources for homeschoolers. We have the Put Your Homeschool Year on Autopilot program, where you do work on starting with that vision and then creating a flexible plan for your homeschool year. We also have a podcast for kids called the Wonder World Podcast. So just so many things that we try to offer for families to help them out along their homeschooling journey. And you can find all of that at pambarnhill.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Pam, thank you for being here today. This has been such a cool conversation. I've learned a lot. I hope my listeners have learned a lot, and I hope they check you out as well. I know I will be as I add more to our day. And I really like the talking about current events. And I'm sure there's different levels of what we would expose a five-year-old to versus an eighth and 11th grader. But I like that idea, though, because I felt like in my 30s, I was trying to play catch up on current events. Like, okay, here's a current event, but what happened before this to make this happen? So even dipping in a little bit, and I realized that probably is important to kind of even let a five-year-old know about what's going on today, so that he doesn't feel the need to play catch up and make it kind of part of the history lesson. So that's really cool. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.